Tenor with Doc. Steering was no longer important. All they had to do was break clear of the patch of killing weed. Eventually, having lost another oar, they were in clear water. Doc was doubled up, fighting for breath.
At my age, to fall victim to an aquatic herbaceous border.
Hey, I can smell land. Earth and growing things.
Above the layer of mist, they could all hear the lonely cry of swooping gulls, cut off from their food in the invisible ocean. Doc noticed that his oar blade had struck something.
Must be a rock. Must be closer than we thought.
He stopped rowing and leaned over the side of the boat, recoiling and shifting to the center of the thwart. His lined face was as pale as a laundered sheet.
Doc, what's wrong? Are we running aground?
Run aground, my dear fellow? I think not. A blessing, that would be. No, I believe... Yes, I am certain of it, that we would do well to bend our backs and hasten for the shore yonder.
Doc, just tell us what you saw.
You recall, shortly after our arrival in this part of old New England, that we had something of a difficulty with a mutated killer whale and a great white shark?
Yeah? Fireblast, you mean there's...
The boat shifted uneasily as something grated along its keel.
The great-grandfather of all muti sharks. Oh, upon my soul, but it's so. 50 feet, if it's... I looked straight down into the grinning jaws and that devil's eye, empty and without soul. Oh, let us away, friends!
Nobody needed any further encouragement, bending to the remaining oars, propelling the little boat forward in a series of great rushes, the whirlpools from the blades vanishing swiftly behind them. Christy in the bow kept careful watch for any sharp-fanged rocks that might suddenly tear the bottom from the whaleboat and dump them all in the treacherous, chill water. She kept hearing the sucking noise of the sea, tangling around the gray boulders that marked the mixing of land and ocean.
Left, Jack. Left!
The fog was finally showing a willingness to clear away. Visibility improved, and the sun broke through above their heads in a vapid glow. Ryan twice spotted the great dorsal fins of the muti carnivores as they skimmed toward the shore. The bodies of the chilled seamen from the Salvation had obviously attracted several of the whale sharks, and the noise of the oars in the water had brought them in close to hand.
I can see it. A bit to the right. There's a channel between rocks. Looks like it leads to a beach.
Now they could all see land, the rowers squinting over their shoulders. There were cliffs above a strip of glistening shingle, and on either side of the boat they could make out numerous tiny islands, mostly peaks of rock sticking above the calm sea.
Recognize it, JB?
Nah. Once we get ashore, I'll use the sextant and get a bearing. Deacon knows this coast, and figured we were close to the redoubt. Fortress was what he called it. Got to be the same place.
Take it slow and easy. Lots of stuff just below the surface.
The narrowing channel twined between the fragments of the old reef. Ryan remembered now the state of the redoubt, with its sunken corridors and tidal damage from the old nukings, and wondered how easy they'd find it to get back inside and reach the gateway. The final few yards to the shingle were between jaws of rock less than a dozen feet across. Beyond them was a last stretch of water where tiny waves tumbled ceaselessly, one upon another, whispering to the smooth pebbles. Under the keel, Ryan could see through clearer water, to the bottom, perhaps 20 feet below. Even as he glanced over the side of the boat, he saw the sinuous form of one of the lethal whale sharks, white-bellied, move past them, teeth bared in its eternal smile.
Put the oars in. Too narrow. Sea will carry us in from here.
They floated in silently, all of them staring up at the lowering cliffs, their shining flanks streaked with bright splashes of emerald moss. The last remnants of the mist still clung to the rock walls, like ghostly webs.
Let me come in the bow.
Ryan changed places with Christy. He held his automatic rifle in his right hand. As he moved, his boot slipped on the long whaling spears that were tucked in near the bow, their hafts ready for the hand of the harpooner. For a moment, his mind flicked back to Donful, and he thought how he'd missed the tall Apache, as he'd missed so many good companions over the years. Lori shuffled on her seat.
Hurry up, boat!
Gradually, riding 3 feet forward and then two back, the boat came in closer. The rocks loomed on both sides of them, seamed with narrow caves and shadowed inlets. But their attention was on the beach, where the keel eventually grounded. Ryan stood, ready to leap onto the shingle to haul them up higher, when he heard a familiar voice that froze him in place.
Not a blink of an eye, Cully, or it's fins over for everyone. Blasters at your feet, Slow, slow, and very slow.
Ryan lowered the Heckler and Coke, putting it on the thwart of the boat, seeing from the corner of his eye that the others were doing the same. Only Jack in the stern wasn't moving. The boy's mouth was set in a tight, etched line, and his fingers moved toward the butt of his magnum.
Snow has about to meet his maker. Does he bleed white as a muti, or red as the roses?
Let it alone, Jack. She'll chill you. Put the blaster down.
Reluctantly, the boy did as he was told. Moving like a scout through a trembler minefield, Ryan turned to face the woman, knowing that life and death were now a breath apart for all of them in the whaleboat. She stood in the bow of the dory. He guessed that she must have heard their approach and chosen the tiny cove in which to hide. The boat was pulled in so that it could only be seen when one was past it. She wore the long dress with sea boots beneath it, and the Spanish pistol was held steady in her hand. She was smiling. Just behind her and a little to the side was Cyrus Ogg, holding his own blaster aimed at the six friends. They were only about 20 feet apart.
Well now, here's a thing, isn't it, Mr. Ogg?
Indeed, ma'am. Here's a thing indeed. As thou sayest, Captain Quad, here's a thing indeed.
Rowing all this blighted way through fag and sharks to meet up again like the best of friends. Wouldn't thou say, Mr. Ogg?
I would say that, ma'am. Indeed, I would surely say that.
Now, easy to pick off as stabbing a legless roach in a tin basin, Mr. Ogg.
Even easier, Captain. Even easier than that, I'd say.
Rarely had Ryan seen two people looking so smugly pleased with themselves. Something moved near the edge of the rocks, darting toward the water with a fast, skittering gait. It caught everyone's eye, but neither Pierre Quad nor Cyrus Ogg relaxed their vigilance, or let the muzzles of their blasters wander away from the whaleboat. Ryan watched the creature, which looked like a cross between a small rabbit and a large rat, but with a skin that glistened in the dawning, as if it were covered in scales. It ignored the two dories and paddled across the cove, quickly reaching deeper water. It passed only a few feet in front of Ryan, head held back, little eyes twinkling like polished buttons, whiskers perkily aloft, paws twitching up spray. Its teeth were bared with the effort of its exertions. There was a swirl and a flash of dull white sandpaper skin and teeth, row upon serrated row, as the shark rolled belly up in its attack. The little animal vanished, and the water cleared once more, as though nothing had happened. One single bubble of dark maroon blood came plopping to the surface.
Not a good place for swimming, Mr. Ogg.
Not a good place at all, Captain.
It's only me you want, you sick bitch. Let the others go.
That's an order to the captain, Outlander Deadman. Well named art thou not. Deadman. Outlander Deadman.
Ryan was trying to work out the odds. There wasn't much doubt that the first volley from the mate and the woman would put at least two and probably three of them over the side. And that meant death, with the sharks cruising by, jaws gaping. One of his friends might snatch up a blaster, but the odds were that there would be a lot of bloodshed. A triangular fin broke the water near the boat, causing a wave to rock them from side to side. Another appeared in the entrance from the open sea, and then a third. At a guess, Ryan figured there were now at least a half dozen of the muti monsters in the constricted waters of the narrow cove. Their ceaseless swirling was raising a swell, water lapping at the jagged